This episode is brought to you by George Foreman's Knockout Pain Relief. Welcome to The Last Storm. My name is Mark Flatt, and I'm calling in from the Pocono Mountains in Pennsylvania. Today, as always, I'm joined by my brother Dave. He's calling in from Maryland at the banks of the Potomac River. Thanks for joining us. Here we go.
I was just thinking about, like, stupid shit my kids say. And my kids are the worst at eavesdropping, and I always, like, catch myself saying stuff around them, and they're always like, "Dad, that's the fourth F word you used today." You know, like, oh, damn it. Like, you know, like, I'm so bad at it. And I feel so bad that, like, my kids have to listen to my language sometimes, but I guess that's a progression of where you live sometimes. And when we lived in Hawaii, like, every 10-year-old was running around saying fuck. Like, it was just part of their, like, conversation. So, like, I come here, and it's, like, every other word here. And I don't know if people here in D.C. area, like, are used to it yet. I know if we're in Boston, everybody would be cool with it. But D.C. seems a little bit more, like, up and tidy about shit like that. So, I don't know. Anyways, Dad and I were talking, and, of course, my son's eavesdropping in the conversation that we're talking in. And I was like, you know, Timmy, the first time I ever heard how your dad, your grandfather got his name, we were in Yellowstone National Park. And, you know, your great-grandfather, Grandfather Bob, had named my dad Timothy David Flatt for Touchdown Flatt. And one of his, he says his regrets was he didn't name it after himself, you know, Richard Robert Flatt. And he, you know, wanted to carry his name on. And we walked away, and Dad puts his arm around me, and he's like, "Dave, the reason that that would have never happened is because we already have too many dicks in the family, you know, because Richard is Dick, right?" Anyways, my son is in the back seat, and he pipes up, and he's like, "Dad, how many dicks do we have in the family?" And it was just like this moment where I'm like, I'm not even upset. Like, touche, son.
What? Dude, that's funny. We were talking to Mom and Dad yesterday, and I was telling them about Inventing Anna, the TV show.
Oh, I love it. Yeah.
And Netflix. I was like, yeah. And the kids were like, I was like, "Do the voice." And then they were like, "You're so basic, bitch." Like that to Mom and Dad. So I guess Anna, they get it all.
That's great, dude. That's funny.
Like, "Run it again. Your system sucks." it kept going.
Oh my god, dude!
I know, dude. It's a pretty good show. I haven't finished it. I'm on the last episode, so
I got stuck on the last episode too. So I didn't. I mean, I know what's happening. You know, like it's obvious what's happening. I hate to see the downfall on these guys. Like, I love to see the uprise, right? And like all the awesome shit they get to do. But when they crash and come down to earth, it's always kind of sucks. So, like, look at how many billions of dollars they lost or hundreds of millions of dollars they lost. And it's like, oh, shit, man.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure her lawyer is going to get her out of most of it, because otherwise I don't think they'd be, like, showing him as much.
Yeah.
Like, he's a shitty lawyer.
Basic, man. She really does have the money.
It's entertaining, but, yo, so this... you know what else is entertaining?
What's that, man?
That Boston Nets series.
Dude. Oh, holy shit, dude. Kyrie's telling everybody they're number one in the stands, bro. Come on. That's
dude.
Amazing.
Yeah, you got a buzzer beater. You got a flip off. You got everything. And on top of that, man, these cities hate each other.
Oh, yeah.
So it's great.
It's going at it, man. I think this is going to be one of the greatest first round series ever. I mean, we're all saying it, but it could be 4-0 easily, or it could be, you know, 5-1 or 4-1, you know, like,
I don't think it's gonna be 4-0 now. I think the Nets are going to get at least one win.
Yeah.
Right?
But
like, to me, they're still the favorites.
Dude, this is going to be fun. I mean, I hate saying it, but it's going to be a lot of fun to see how these two, and if Ben Simmons, you know, has an opportunity to come play, he could turn that series around completely too. Cause he could be a difference of a 20 play, you know, point a night. So, man, I don't know. This is going to be fun. This is going to be exciting to see how these two guys go.
You know what they say, bro? You know what they say? A playoff series doesn't really start until a team wins on the opposing team's court. So even though Boston has won this game, they had to get a buzzer beater, right? And they were down by one, so it wasn't a buzzer beater or go to overtime. It was a buzzer beater or lose, and or they would have lost home court advantage. And that's, you don't want to play with that fire. So they, I know they're pumped up, but man, yeah, they got to figure something out. The pressure's on them.
That bucket Tatum scored on Irving.
I watched the time so many times, and I just I thought maybe it was stopped. I couldn't believe that after Brown pounded the ball over and over and over and over again, there was still enough time for those two passes to be done to Smart and then to Tatum. I mean, like it seemed like he blew the game, Brown. It really seemed, he dribbled the ball out and then they weren't going to get a shot off, and somehow they got it. I don't know, man. They would have blamed him if they lost. I think it would have been Tatum.
To be honest, the way that he drove to the hole and everybody collapsed like they have been doing all game on Brown, you know, it was almost as just drawn up by, you know, coach. And obviously we've seen the Celtics coach this year just outcoach so many coaches in the NBA. I think that was what we saw last night, is that play was just drawn up perfectly. You know, Brown's,
you can go for that. I'm going to go for that was luck, bro. I'm going to go with luck. You can go with coaching, but I'm going to say that was luck.
The reason I say it was coaching is because Brown's eyes never left Tatum, bro. They never left Tatum. They watched him the entire time. They watched him cutting. They watched, I mean, yeah, there was
going
Tatum
to
knew
Smart
the clock.
And then Smart going back to Tatum. That with that little time left, and for him to be ISO'd with Kyrie, where he can just do a spin move and finish with no pressure.
Yep.
I mean, it was, yeah, that was crazy, dude. And so much going on, like you said, with Kyrie being a former Celtic, being, you know, going at it with the fans. The fans there, they don't like anybody who leaves Boston. You know, they don't mind if somebody gets traded. You know, that's a sacrificial lamb type thing. But to actually just decide you don't want to be in Boston anymore, like, think of the guys right now. I can think of Gordon Haywood, and who else didn't
Ray
want
Allen.
To stick around? Ray Allen, and they still haven't forgiven him, but, you know, KG says it's okay to forgive him now.
I mean, I don't know. I look at it all as kind of like, it's just one big unfortunate mess that the Nets weren't healthy, because they're really one of the two best teams, or three best teams in the league right now, and they're having to play against one of the other best teams in the league at this point, and it's kind of crazy.
And, you know, speaking of something fortunate, bro, for us, the Clippers ended up not getting Paul George for their play-in game against the Pelicans, which apparently they thought that was going to be good enough. I think it's scary to bring a player back for something like that, but he got COVID. He didn't play. They lose to the Pelicans, and now, bro, we got the 12th best lottery odds for that pick now? Like, what the hell?
No, check this out, though, which is even greater. Think about this. Shaq was drafted by Orlando Magic, right? They had the worst record in the league that year, and then the following year, they had the 10th pick in that draft, and they were able, or the 10th best chances, which was only a 1.5% chance that they would get the number one draft pick. What happens, Mark? Orlando jumps up from number 10 to number 1 and draft Chris Webber. So we've seen this happen in NBA history before, and I'm just looking at this right now as saying, I want to be greedy. I want to look at two top 5 draft picks this next year, and I'm cool with if we stay at number 4 with our draft pick, and then we have, you know, the Clippers draft pick go ahead and jump into number 1. I mean, I'm cool with that.
I can't ever figure out what the hell really happened with Chris Webber, because it's like,
okay, injury, man.
Yeah, but no, I mean, like, with his teams, because you said he was drafted by Orlando, but I guess he was traded before he ever played. He went to Golden State, and I think they signed him to like a 1-year deal or something weird. And then he's like, next thing you know, I think he's with the Wizards or something, or the Bullets back then. And then before you know it, he's with the Kings. Like, his travel, like where he played and stuff, it confuses the shit out of me. And I watched him play a lot. I remember him playing in college. Everybody remembers his, you know, college fiasco, but like
that derailed his NBA career almost, bro. That's what's so insane about it.
How does Orlando have Webber and then just trade him? Like, I don't get some of this stuff.
Well, you got Shaq, Webber, and Penny Hardaway. I mean,
yeah,
that's a pretty
fucking
stellar
team, bro.
Yeah, that's a pretty stellar team right there. But I thought they played 1 year together. But I thought that year was an injury-ridden year for all three of the guys. Man, I forget. I need to go back.
I think you're rewriting history, bro. I don't think that ever happened.
Now I'm gonna go back and look it up now.
Dude, seriously, I saw that like they gave like it was the Warriors. They signed Weber to I think a four-year or five-year deal, but they gave him the player option after 1 year. Like, how do you do that with a draft pick? Give a player option like that. That's crazy, dude. Like,
well, you're right, because 93-94, he played for Golden State for 1 year. And then Washington for 3 years. And then the Sonics. And then Sacramento.
The Sonics? I forgot the Sonics, dude. Totally. Like, he was good with Sacramento. But, like, the way that you let a number one pick have a player option after year one, I mean... That still boggles my mind, and there's so much that happened, bro, at that time in basketball where it was like the people who ran these teams were fucking morons, and they didn't understand the value of a draft pick, and they were like always doing the dumbest deals, and there's still a bit of that going on right now. The most common way I see it are heavily protected picks. Anytime somebody trades a heavily protected pick that is unlikely to convey for multiple years, that's real bad for their team. I think they think it's good just in case, but the truth is they can't trade any future picks because they're protecting their picks so heavily. And it's like, well, we don't want to feel like we gave up a number one pick, so we're going to protect it. But it's like, you just made it so you can't trade three or four picks in the future because you protected that one.
And let's just be clear. I looked this up. So I want to apologize to everybody here. Magic drafted Chris Webber first overall in 92 before shipping him to Golden State in exchange for Penny Hardaway and three first round picks. So that's how Penny Hardaway ended up with Magic.
Okay. Dude, I was like, you're talking about NBA 2K when you made up that team and you put
it
on.
I know. I'm like, oh my gosh. Remember that time I like drafted Penny Hardaway? No. Penny Hardaway.
Okay, so Penny was from there and they got three first round. But still, dude. Oh, man, could you imagine Weber
and he only played
and
1 year
Shaq?
At Golden State.
Yeah. Like I said, they gave him a stupid contract, bro.
Yeah.
Like the dumbest contract in history.
And then then I guess they did trade. Chris Webber made 5 All-Star teams. Horrible. Washington made to acquire the Rookie of the Year. Have cost, let's see, including Kobe Bryant and Steve Nash. That's what Chris Webber cost the Bullets, Kobe Bryant, and Steve Nash. God damn it. Dude. That's hilarious. I mean, could have. I mean, that's all about drafting if they had drafted those guys.
Yeah, but still, like, that's the value of these picks is, like, there are players like that available in these areas. Yeah, you got to be good at identifying them, but I don't know, man.
That's why it's so important to have somebody like Sam Presti and the staff that Sam Presti has picked, man. I mean, think about this.
Yeah, dude.
Look at what we've been able to see in the last 3 years of this draft. You know, yes, some of them haven't hit yet, but it's the possibilities that get us excited about it. And that's why I feel like this next draft is just as important as the last two for us.
I
look at, there's two players on the top of my board. They're 1A. If Sam Presti picked either one of them, I would be ecstatic. Now, I would be ecstatic for any of 7 or 8 players that I have circled for our first pick. But if we get one of these two players, I would be ecstatic. I think we'd win the draft if that was the case. And that's Chet Holmgren and Jaden Ivey, man. Those are the two guys that I circle and I put stars next to that I say, these are the guys that I would love to have on this team. Jaden Ivey, for every reason that he reminds me of Russ, just who can shoot better than Russ. But the way he runs the team, the way he understands the way that the flow of the game goes, I'm telling you, this team would be insane if we had a player like Jaden Ivey on this team. And then, of course, Chet Holmgren, there's no doubt about it that he's one of the better players that is 6'11 that I've seen in a very long time. His skinny frame, the way he shoots the ball, his defense, the way he gets up the court. These guys are two of the best players in this draft. And for me, I'm circling both of them saying 1-2, either one, I'm happy.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously a lot depends on the upcoming lottery, and we're clearly excited about that. We got a lot going on, and just having a couple picks in that is a pretty fucking great thing. So I'm going to be curious to see what happens, but I think what we should start doing, bro, is start breaking down players. And I think, you know, why not? Who would you rather start with, Jaden or Chet?
Oh, man. See, that to me is difficult because Chet is going number one. So the only way we get Chet is if he's number
one. Are you for sure? Is this like Cade Cunningham for sure, bro?
No, it's not like Cade Cunningham because I think there's one or two teams, if they got the number one pick, they would not go towards the Chet way. But one or two teams out of the entire NBA, you know, like to me, like the chances that he's not going
is number one. Is he our number one pick? If we get the number one pick, would we pick him number one?
We would pick him number one, or we would trade back and rake in a shit ton of draft picks in the course of doing that while picking up either Jaden Ivey, Jabari Smith, Paolo Banchero.
Yeah. Sheldon, I can't say some Sharp. Of these guys' names either.
Yeah, but Sheldon Sharp. These are the guys that I could say that we would win the draft if we had the number one pick and we traded back in that draft to pick up one of these guys, because we could pick up three or four additional first-round draft picks for the future if we traded essentially Chet Holm and Holmgren and we were able to pick up blank. You know, one of
so
the four best players.
So somebody might see him as the number one pick, but do you think – like, we would look at him as the player we wanted.
I think Sam Presti looks at every player at the top of the draft as this is a player that we would want. I'm convinced that if we had the first pick last year, that, you know, we would be looking at Josh Giddey, but we would be trying to find a different way of picking up Josh Giddey. Does that make sense?
So like, tell me what you like about Chet so much.
His flow of the game, the way that he utilizes his length, the way his shot is, he shoots at his peak. I think that's really difficult for a big man to be able to do. The way he drives to the hole, the way he plays defense, there's so many little things that he does that I look at it, and his game from college is going to transition very easily into the NBA. Like, there's very few guys that you see their game like that. Yes, he's skinny. Yes, he needs time. But Sam Presti has proven that he does not mind drafting guys that are undersized, you know, weight-wise, with KD, with Poku, some of these other guys that we have drafted before. So I look at this as that one of those guys that I see in Chet Holmgren, he's probably one of the best big men I have scouted in a very long time. He's way better than any other player that we've seen in the powered forward slash center role that could play both positions. The way he stretches the floor out really just goes inside, you know, coincide with the Thunder. He sets amazing screens, Mark, but so much more just than amazing screens is that once he sets a screen on a much smaller person, he slips to the hole with a guy on his backside, or he'll even pop up for the three. Like, he understands the game. There's no like, okay, will he fit in the Oklahoma City Thunder rotation? Will he fit in the Oklahoma City Thunder offense? There's none of that, because he will fit just perfectly into it. And that's why I say that I have a hard time, if we had the number one pick, that we would not go with Chet Holmgren, because he is that special of a player.
So let me ask you this, man. Like, give me, like, I hate doing this because I'm like the worst at player comps, but give me a player comp. See, that's a good sign, because whenever it's hard to think of a comp, that means that there's a chance that these guys are their own player, which is important. You don't want to like be like, oh, this is going to be the next Shaq, because nobody's going to be the next Shaq.
And I think that's what's interesting about Chet. Like, I go down and I think about the way he plays defense coming out of college, and it's like, oh, okay. I'm comparing him to a kid who played high
defense.
School out of college.
He's very strong on defense then.
And
sure.
I think about his skinny, his size. I'm like, he could be like a KD or KG guy, type guy on defense. And rebounding. Like, I could see that. But something that KG didn't pick up until later in his career was that three-point shot that Chet already has. So, like, you know, man, like, I don't know. Like, that's
what are
the
chances that he ends up being Christian Laettner?
There's every chance of that, bro. Every NBA pick that we're going to talk about has that opportunity to become Christian Laettner or Mitch McGarry or whoever flares out really fast in the NBA. I mean, remember that year, what was it, like 10 years ago probably, where we were talking about the NBA draft and I was telling you it was like Cleveland Cavaliers had the first pick and I'm like, they're going to go with Anthony Edwards.
Yeah, I remember.
Was it Anthony Edwards? It wasn't Edwards.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, from Nevada, or from Vegas, wherever, UNLV.
Not Anthony Edwards. Anthony Bennett, bro.
Anthony Bennett, that's right. And I was totally up on this guy. I thought he was going to be the next best power forward, the way he played defense, and I was all about him, right? Obviously, he flared out pretty quickly in the NBA. But things like that happen where somebody falls in love with a player, and it's like, this guy's going to be amazing. He's going to be so good. And then you talk yourself into buying that player, essentially, or you're drafting that player, giving him $150 million, you know, like whatever it is, like people talk to them and then all of a sudden you look back and you're like, well, that was a fucking huge mistake. You know, like,
yeah,
the only way to do that is by stepping out.
I mean, you know, as we've been talking, I'm like watching, you know, I think he's got a lot that can play in the NBA. So my biggest question would be with him, would be health, bro. Is that the same way you feel?
Absolutely. And I mean, it's all about
health. I love his outlet passes, by the way. Holy shit.
It's all about health. And, like, that's the thing about it is, like, there's no better team than going to the Oklahoma City Thunder because you got to do what we do with Poku and everybody else. Take your time.
Yeah.
15, 16, 18, 20, 25 minutes a game, and all of a sudden you're starter. You know, like, that's it, you know?
Yeah, he's an animal around the rim. He loves finishing. And you know, like you said, he can knock down that three, but it takes him a bit of time to like to get into his shot. That's not that big of a deal for a guy like him. But the nice thing is when people respect his shot, what he can do on the putting the ball on the deck after that. Because if you don't guard him, both. He's got his balls on the dick, bro.
I could have sworn you said dick, bro.
I swear I probably did.
Oh, that was good, dude.
Yeah, dude. I mean, yeah, but like defensively, I mean, I know he's playing against college guys, but like this guy absolutely uses his length.
When he blocks his shot, bro. How about when he blocks a shot? He's sprinting down the court before the guy's feet ever hit the ground. Like, like he's so fast. Like it's blocked and he's up the court and half court before anybody's able to blink. Like. And if he's not doing that, he's getting the block or he's getting the steal or he's getting the inbounds pass right into, you know, to the point guard and he's starting the fast break. And this is what I was saying. When you're looking at a player, you have to look at the system that he's going into. Does he fit the system? You know, and Coach D in the system that's built, I feel like is all around Chet. So like, if we got the third pick or second pick, you know, like, don't put it past Sam Presti to draft up, try to, you know, get that number one pick. You know, like, this is a young man that I look at is, like, Poku is one of my favorite players right now because of the way he plays. But if you look at what Chet Holmgren can do and Poku can do, like, I mean, Chet is way more advanced right now than Poku is. But they have very similar bodies. They have very similar styles. They have very similar defensive mindsets. So, again, this goes right to the aspect of what Sam Presti likes.
Yeah, I think for me, for Chet, like, other than his three-point shot, and maybe more than his three-point shot, I feel like his most NBA-ready skill is the way that he can pass the ball from the post cross-court and the way he can, like, take a second, assess the defense, see what they're doing, and then make a decision about how he's going to slice it down, whether that's a spin move to finish at the basket, like I said, the cross-court pass to the open three-pointer, or even like that cutter, which is something that our offense likes to do all the time, is send multiple cutters when the defense turns their heads, which is a great thing to do, especially at that post. But the way that he likes to receive the ball, kind of in a similar spot to where KD liked to receive it early in his career. Now, he does different things. He's not just going to, like, you know, ISO and then, you know, take a lot of mid-range shots. Like, this guy ultimately likes to play team basketball. And that's really apparent with the way that he loves his teammates. But like you said, he does the little things. He gets that block. But a lot of people can get that block and then, you know, take a minute to, like, I don't know, try to pump up the crowd or pump themselves up or something. But he does the little things, and it's almost like a concern that he is such a hustle player, because, you know, you kind of want your stars to know that they're stars, but at the same time, maybe not this early. You know what I mean?
So let me ask you this then. You put him on our team at the four, at the five, at the hybrid, you know, big man position that we play, right?
Yeah.
Do we become the best passing team in the league immediately?
Yeah.
Without question, right? That's my point, is that, like, this is the perfect type of person.
It wouldn't be all him, right?
It wouldn't be. But how many post guys can go cross-court from the post and pass it out to go cross-court, you know, from the wing, you know, or cross-court from the top of the key or whatever? You know, it doesn't matter.
I would say
we cover every single position on passing with Chet in the game.
Like, yeah, there's not a lot of guys that can do that in a way that makes their coach happy. Like, it's a very small number, because there's just so many chances of bad things happening when you throw that pass, that there's only a couple players that, you know, really feel like, you know, you want that to happen with. Like, usually it's like, you got them there, let's do something else, not throw a cross court. But the way he does it, that's new school NBA basketball with an old school flair. And that's cool. Like, that's kind of opposite. Usually it's old school with new school flair, but for him, it feels opposite. It's weird. He is what do we call him, bro? We call him a unicorn. We got a pterodactyl, but, you know, we got to think of something, because he's a 7-footer who likes to play wherever he can catch the ball, even if that's in the open court. But we know how much we love to have bigs get the rebound and immediately start the fast break with a dribble, right? Yep. That's something that we institute in our team, and he definitely does all those things.
Oh, yeah, and if you're looking at, as far as comparing him to big men in the past that have come up, you know, in the last even 10 years, there's not been a guy like him. You just can't.
Kevin Love, bro, that's the last one I can think of, like, quite like him.
Yeah, that could be grabbing, you know, 20 rebounds in a game like nothing, and putting up 20 points or 30 points like nothing, you know, like.
And great passing, bro.
Yeah,
great
passing. And understands the game and how to get up the court and all this other stuff.
But he's got a couple of inches, and, like, something about him is more exciting than Kevin Love. Maybe it's those 2 inches, maybe it's the extra long arms, but, like,
the way he glides up the court, man, he's fast. He's deceptionally fast. Like that's the thing that's crazy. He's going to, like, think about it. Josh Giddey and Shea running the fast break. It's going to be like 10 points a game going to Chet fast break. It's like, boom.
Yeah.
Another
and
10.
If you have Chet out there, and then you got Bazley next to him, maybe at the four or something.
Roby. It doesn't matter. I mean, you listen, the reason that you have Roby, Bazley, and JRE running in and out there is because Chet will be able to play the power forward position on defense, allowing those guys to take up the body in the majority of the minutes, pounding in the body with the bodies. Those are the guys that are ready to go to war. You know, you don't want Chet going up against those centers right now. Like, just like you don't want Poku going up against those setters night in, night out. Yeah, he did at the end of the season, and we saw a lot of it. But you have to gain a lot of weight in order to be able to do that. And especially with Chet, you know, he's going to be playing against the power forwards and small forwards for most of the season if we were to pick him up.
You know, what's crazy about him is, like, when he gets in the fast break or in the open court and he gets low, and then he does an in-and-out dribble. Yeah, I mean,
so sick, bro.
He goes in and out on people, and he starts leaning one way, and somehow he
doesn't remind you of Josh.
Yeah, in a different way. I hadn't thought about that, but yeah, I mean, there's this mentality of, like, once you get the defense on their heels, like, your goal is to destroy them. It's not, you're not just trying to be like, oh, let's run down court next to each other. You know, you're trying to fake them out, get them falling backwards, and then just torch them.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, bro, he's got skills, you know. So I know that's what you're supposed to say about a number one pick, but I'll tell you this right now. The difference between how I feel about him and Cade is significant. I think he is actually probably a better prospect than Cade. Now, Cade had, you know, that consensus number one mentality, like, you know, every few years you see a player come along and everybody knows he's going to be number one. And I just feel like I questioned whether or not Cade was a superstar. And that was because he lacked, in my opinion, anything elite except for his overall feel for the game, and which is, you know, elite, but, or it was in college. Now, you know, he's going to have a chance to continue to improve. But I think Chet could be a better player for sure, dude. I think that's a big possibility.
I mean, that's the thing about it. I look at Cade Cunningham as being one of the better prospects that, you know, we've ever scouted, we've ever looked at. Obviously, we're going to, history will tell how good Cade Cunningham will be. But if I'm looking at Cade and you're asking me, with the team that we already have, if I'd rather have Cade Cunningham or Chet on my team, with the team that we have, it's Chet, you know, because Chet fills in so many question marks that we have going into this offseason, you know, like, what are we going to do with Favors? Well, with Chet there, we don't necessarily need Favors. You know, like, that's $10 million we save. You know, these are the questions that we're looking at going into it, because it matters when it comes to signing contracts for these players that are all around us. You know, we got Rich is coming up for a contract, right? You know, we've got Baisley. We've got Lu Dort. We have all these guys that are coming up for contracts. So we're starting to look at these picks right here. And I see Chet as a big deal, because if we don't get Chet, then I look at Jabari Smith as maybe the next big man that I would circle and say, this is a guy that I like a lot. But the problem is, though, is that even there, like, there's a lot of room that needs to happen. Jabari is a great player. He's a great scorer. He understands the game amazingly. But he would take time to fit into our system. He wouldn't be a perfect fit right away. And that's okay. Not every guy that we're going to pick this year is going to be a perfect fit. And I think about guys like Trey Mann that had a little bit of harder time breaking through in the beginning. We've seen some other guys that have harder time breaking through, but they figure out a way to do so. I'm not worried about whoever we're going to draft this year making it and breaking through, because this is what's going to be special, man, is this team next year, we're going to look great. And there's going to be a lot of guys that are coming up for contracts. And not just that, Mark, but whoever we add is just going to be that much more powerful for our playoff run, because everybody knows if we make the playoffs, these guys that are on our team are going to get nice contracts. And that's big, because that's what these guys need. They need them to have a nice contract. Isaiah Roby needs a nice contract. You know what I'm saying? We need to get these guys to get paid well, because that's what needs to happen.
Awesome. And our goal, Dave and I are going to try to break down the top five players right now that people are looking at, based off of ESPN's top five. And then we're going to go ahead and take a look coming up at some of the other players that we feel like we might snag kind of at different places because they're high value. Different players that maybe other people aren't covering because, you know, they're from overseas. It's hard to get good video on them and stuff. We really want to dig into the types of people that kind of fit the profile of Poku and Josh Giddey, where it's like they're kind of the international man of mystery, if you will, the Austin Powers of the draft. That's what we're looking for.
Hell yeah, man. Those are the dimes. Those are the ones that we get excited about. This last year, we drafted J.R. Reed and Aaron Wiggins in the second round. The year before that, we drafted the foreign guys. You know, there's this massive amount of guys that are coming across from overseas. That's, we got Fit Krejci, we got Maladon. So I feel like every year it's something different. It's a mixed box. But this year, man, in the second round is where a lot of these guys that are international players are coming from. It's going to be exciting, because this is where we're probably going to see a really special pick come through this year especially.
Yeah, so we'll be doing that in the lead up to the lottery. As soon as the lottery happens, then obviously throw everything else out the window. We're going to be trying to figure out who we might be picking at different spots. So we're going to be excited about that. But in the meantime, we're just going to take our time, have fun, watch some video, you know, break down some of these guys' skills and why we think we might want them. And I think Chet is a great place to start. I'm pretty excited about him. I think it's easy to be like, oh, this guy could be like a Dirk with, you know, all this different type of stuff going for it. But right now, that obviously is predicated whether or not we get a high enough pick to be able to get him, but it's a lot of fun to watch some of these guys play, so I'm pumped up about it, bro. Let's get back on Wednesday, dude. You ready for that? All right, so thanks again for joining us, and we'll see you then. And as always, this episode was brought to you by George Foreman's Knockout Pain Relief.